This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara, and this is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode of the Kenai Conversation, we're talking to Sean O'Reilly and Jonna Beach with the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank. Thank you both so much for being here. Usually with Kenai Convos, I love to start with a little bit of introductions, and so I'd love to have both of you just introduce yourselves and talk about your role at the food bank. Jonna, obviously, this is, you know, a new role for you, so why don't we go ahead and start with you?
Sure. My name is Jonna Beach, and I am the newly appointed, awarded, accepted executive director as of September 1, and I've been in the Kenai community since 2008. And been in the nonprofit world since 2010. And I'm very excited for this opportunity to be of service to the food bank.
Hey, we're very excited to have John on board the food bank. I am currently the board president. I've been on the board for 10 years, serving the position of president for the past 4 years. And again, we are very excited for Jonna to join us in our mission. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, can you tell me a little bit about the process for selecting a new executive director? I feel like a lot of folks, you know, kind of associated, you know, Greg Meyer with the food bank, like the two were synonymous. You know, what was that like having him step down and trying to find somebody to come in and take over that role?
Greg did a fabulous job for us, and we were very grateful for his service. But he did have some family matters that needed attending to in Minnesota, where he's from, and gave us a lot of opportunity, or plenty of time, to start the search for executive director, which is not an easy task at any point. So after a couple of attempts, we finally came to having Jonna fill in as our interim executive director, so we could keep the facility open and working. And certainly discovered quickly, once we saw how she worked, that she was the ideal candidate to become the executive director. We offered the position, and we were blessed to have her accept that position. And she's been the executive director, I believe, a whole month now, hasn't it been?
About 23 days.
Yeah,
so. But who's counting?
Things are working out really well for both parties. It has to be a good fit, and it's a challenge to find the right person to fit the type of service we provide.
Yeah, why is that? What are you looking for in an executive director candidate?
You know, there's a lot of need in our community for people that are experiencing food insecurity, and it's a broad-based job, because not only do you have to interact with all the clients and manage an excellent staff who does a really great job, but really, one thing that I don't think people realize as a food bank, we're a very big logistics organization. A lot of it is just about organizing the food that's donated, getting into our facility and to distribute it to the correct groups, as well as another big component is fundraising. Fundraising is essential. We're a nonprofit. We're not really government. We don't have a lot of government grants or anything. We do have some food coming in from the government, but we do not get any money directly. So it's based on pretty much the community support, and we're blessed to live in a community that's really been very generous over the years.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, you see the food bank, you know, the logo or the big white truck driving around all over. You guys just have such a visible presence on the Central Peninsula, but obviously you serve the entire Kenai Peninsula. Jonna, I mean, I guess, what's your history with the food bank, and how did you decide that you were going to step into this, you know, executive director role after serving as interim director?
So my history with the food bank is back in my other nonprofit jobs, we worked with the food bank in regards to promotion stuff. So I was familiar with Linda Swarner, of course, Greg Meyer, and Sean reached out to me this spring and asked if I wanted to put forward a bid to come in as a contract hire for interim and get them through the audit, get them through the soup supper, give them a little bit of breathing room to hire. And the first day, I think I messaged Sean. I'm like, I feel way too good here. So I inadvertently was fighting myself from the first day I walked in there. And the staff is an amazing staff. We have a great board. Both are very long-term stable, groups. And then the mission of the food bank is definitely one that I fell in love with. And so throughout the handful of weeks that I was there, I couldn't stop fighting myself and went ahead and applied and accepted the offer. And so given my wide skilled set, my 13, 14 years in the nonprofit world, it seemed like a really good fit. And I love it there. I absolutely love it there.
Mm-hmm. And this is just kind of a logistical question. Is your role, is it like a full-time paid position? Are you volunteering? What exactly does that look like?
Currently, as of September 1, full-time paid position year round. Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, and I think it might be helpful too. I know you have provided some helpful statistics here. Can you talk a little bit about, we don't have to do like a whole history of the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, your mission, who you serve, and some of the initiatives that you're currently offering? You mentioned the Soup Supper, which I feel mm-hmm. like is a pretty popular one. What exactly does the food bank do?
So the food bank was started in 1988, and we do serve the entire Kenai Peninsula. You mentioned that we're very visible on the Central Peninsula, but we do run to Homer and to Seward and up to Hope. So we, through our partner agencies and through our services, we actually do serve the entire Kenai Peninsula. In 24, we distributed 1.4 million pounds of food. And so just kind of taking a minute and just realizing how big that number is from the facility that you guys drive by every day on K Beach, mm-hmm. 1.4 million pounds of food in 1 year. We have a Fireweed Diner that is open and free to the public Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. And we typically see anywhere from 85 to 90 people a day through the diner. It is open to any community member that wants to come in. If you're not somebody that's having food insecurities, but you still want to support the food bank, we do have people that come in and just give us a donation for food that day. And last year in 24, the numbers, 23,709 people were fed through the Fireweed Diner. And so just based on those two numbers alone, there is a huge need for the food bank on the Kenai Peninsula. And we do our best to fill that need between the services we provide, our partner agencies. And I can kind of defer to Sean to kind of jump in and go a little bit more from there.
Exactly. 23,709 meals in a year. Think about the population of Kenai or Soldotna. That's more than and Seward and Homer. I mean, really, that's more than all those cities combined. I'm pretty close to accurate, I believe. Mm-hmm. That we would make lunch for. That's a lot of people, right? The distribution is far-reaching, not just Homer, but across to Seldovia, not just north, but over to Tionic. We serve all the communities of the peninsula, which is a really large geographical area. Another point that's often overlooked, I think, is that we are, a lot of food banks are warehouses. The food comes in and it goes out to distribution to agencies. Mm-hmm. Okay, we do that. A lot of food banks simply feed people every day in the diner. Okay, we do that. And other food banks just provide direct service to people every day, the people with needs that come in every day. We do that as well. So we do all three things that many food banks across the country only do one, maybe two of those items.
And why is that? I mean, what is the benefit from offering, I guess, like maybe attacking the problem of food insecurity from all of those different angles?
Exactly. So there's all different levels of need in our community, and we're trying to fulfill all those needs through the one agency, one food bank with multiple agents. So we have over 65 agencies that help us. During Greg's interim, he helped Anchor Point establish their food bank. Okay, mm-hmm. Now they're up and they're running, and they're kind of on their own now. And the same with Homer. We have a board member from Homer, and for the past, I'd say 5 or 6 years, we've been the primary source of the food for that food bank as well. And they're different. They do a distribution one day a week, mm-hmm. but every day there's a refrigerator outside with meals and food available for their clients. So again, they have a little different demographic and a little different need. And it's important that we support those agencies and those other food banks to sub-distribute the food through our our food bank. And then again, the Food Bank of Alaska supports us with providing us the TFAP boxes and some other things that they do, help us logistically provide meals and food throughout the community.
Mm-hmm. That was going to be a question that I had, because, I mean, obviously here on the Central Peninsula, you guys have a large facility. Other places, you mentioned the Anchor Point Food Pantry and some of these other smaller operations. How closely are you working with them? Is that an everyday thing, or providing support where it's needed? How are you working with these other smaller groups?
I believe our visits to Anchor Point is once a week now.
Once a week.
Once mm-hmm. a week. But again, they started with nothing. They didn't have right. any. We sourced some refrigeration I believe from the military, and some buildings that we got set up, and we got helped them get a grant to wire it and all that kind of stuff. So again, the logistics part of things is pretty important. Mm-hmm. Food Bank of Alaska has been a wonderful partner of ours for many, many years. I remember back when COVID hit, it was tough. A month before COVID, our one truck broke.
Oh boy.
We didn't have a distribution truck. I said, well,
that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So let's call Food Bank of Alaska and maybe we could borrow an old one they have. And sure enough, they came through the next day and had a truck for us. And then they ended up just giving us that truck. And of course, COVID struck. And we happened to get a few more trucks from bigger donors. And it was a blessing. But there was a moment where it's like, we don't have a truck. Mm-hmm. We're in trouble. Right. Mm-hmm. But we just reached out and were able to successfully fill that gap and be able to continue to distribute food. So it's really important. I mean, again, we're a big logistics company, but we don't really have the manpower to be like a trucking company or something like that. Although, but local trucking companies support us a lot, filling gaps where we need it. Our local grocery stores are great to provide us food that is not to their standard, but certainly is quite usable and quite quite healthy and ready to be used. And we're very good at how we get that food into the food bank, get it sorted, and get it distributed to our other agencies and through our direct service and used in our diner. Truly, this is the most amazing thing I think about the food bank is that if you went to our dumpster and looked in there, there's no food. Mm-hmm. And there's no waste, and there's a reason for that. Because even what was no longer edible, we provide to the local farmers so that it kind of stays in the food cycle and doesn't go to waste in any way.
Mm-hmm. And how much money is needed to run the food bank on an annual basis, and how much of that comes from, how are you paying, I guess, for the operations of the food bank on an annual basis?
So, there's two ways to look at this. Food is pounds or dollars, as well as dollars or dollars, of course. So 750,000, 800,000 is kind of been an average for us. Okay. We were over 1 million during COVID mm-hmm. For a couple of years. So the need is fluctuating. More is always better.
Yeah.
And we have a great amount of fundraising that we do on an annual basis. Of course, the Soup Supper is one of our primary fundraisers, but it's not our only one. Marathon does a great job providing us very strong funding through their donor relations board, I should say. And as well as, we're focused on financial being prudent, but more importantly, maybe transitioning as we can to a trust situation where we could provide get enough income in a trust generated fashion to not have to be so reliant on the donation situation.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a big relief for everybody. If we could have a consistent funding that said, hey, we've made good investment with the money we have, and that's going to provide us the money we need for the overhead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nope. Sean's doing a great job.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot of stuff that me being new to this role, like I acknowledge that I don't know what I don't know.
Sure.
And that's why I'm very lucky to have board members like Sean that have the history and the knowledge. And I learn every time I hear these guys talk. I'm like, oh, okay, noted. Okay, noted.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess between the diner, which is open, I know you mentioned the hours earlier. I guess for an average, can anybody walk in off the street and pick up like a box of food, or I guess how does that work?
So the food is distributed through the warehouse.
Okay.
You go through the same door. There's two lines. There's the agencies who come in. They might be associated with a church or a community group. And they come in and they shop for food.
Okay.
They have an understanding of what the need is in their particular community or their particular parish, however you want to speak to that. And they shop and they pay a whopping 19 cents a pound.
Okay.
Which is a very minimal handling fee for that food. The second component to that is an individual can go into our direct service area and be provided a temporary food assistance program box, they call it. And it's a box that is provided by most of the foods from the government, and it's dry goods, and it is minimal at best.
Okay.
That's a generous way of saying that. And they go by people in the household, right? Each box is for two people.
Okay.
And in addition to that, that person can go and pick what's been given to us from the local grocery stores. Fresh milk, fresh vegetables, which comes from our garden, comes from local gardeners who provide that food, as well as, you know, everything from the salmon processor to the local grocery stores that provide us meat and vegetables and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have that. When you go to the diner, nobody asks how much you make, what are you here for, we need a donation. That's not how we work. You're free. You're welcome to come in. And whether you have that need or maybe you want to look into volunteering, we provide an opportunity to experience the diner and make a donation if you can.
Mm-hmm.
The diner's food, interestingly enough, is we get from our warehouse. We don't buy that. So our chef, Tanner, great chef, but every day it's a mystery box. What is he going to make? Is the day before he knows what he has for ingredients to serve 90 to 100 people, which I don't know if I could take that kind of stress, but he does a great job with it. He really does a great job with it.
Mm-hmm.
We try to serve a nutritious, balanced meal, always a salad, always a protein, a primary protein, and then, you know, dessert and stuff like that, and drinks, coffee and milk and whatever we might have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm interested in where you're sourcing like the food that you receive, because you mentioned the grocery stores and it's salmon processors, I think you mentioned.
Yeah.
And the
salmon processor. There was a situation this summer where there was a large salmon spill, I guess we might say, and we were notified that we had 30,000 pounds of salmon on the ground, and can you come clean some fish? So we were provided two totes of fish.
Okay.
We found six people to come in and volunteer and clean the fish, and voila. We repurpose.
We ended up, so we sent a tote down to Anchor Point to process and distribute through their location. And then we kept a tote for us, and it ended up yielding 660 pounds of fillets, which we in turn push out to our clients within the next couple of days through the distribution that Shauna just mentioned.
It's such like an Alaska
<Isn't it?
laughs> endeavor.
Isn't it though? Yeah.
So also, we're trying to work with like people that fly out, guide hunt. And the local game processors.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody, when they maybe shoot a moose, want all the meat from that. So instead of it going to waste, we're trying to have that come back to the food bank for distribution. Again, so if you're out there listening and you have excess game, don't bring it straight to us, but go through a processor and they'll donate it to us.
Okay.
And we can redistribute that food. So whether maybe you have a home garden and you got too
Holy
much.
Beets. Yeah. Did you see the photos of those beets?
Oh, yeah.
So a couple weeks ago, a local gardener donated beets to us. And I kid you not, they were like small football sized. It's on our Facebook page. And it was just, boxes and boxes of these huge beets.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty impressive what they were able to grow.
And you guys obviously have like a pretty impressive garden structure at the food bank right mm-hmm. now. I guess how productive is that?
Very. Tanner will, so Tanner's our chef. He will go out and harvest vegetables from the garden for use in the diner. And then we're actually, this Friday, we're having our big potato dig. So if you want to come out and get dirty, you're more than welcome to come out and help us dig up some potatoes. We've actually been feeding a baby moose that we believe might be orphaned. He has been roaming our garden for the last handful of weeks.
Oh boy.
Yes. Yeah. So we're looking into getting a grant so that we can actually fully fence in our garden area, even though we do love feeding any and all creatures. However, he's intruding on our garden.
Sure. He's like, man, you guys got some like high quality produce here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. He's there, you know, early in the morning. And then as we're leaving for the day, he starts making his way out to the garden again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of the garden, if you notice the raised beds that are beautiful in their Home Depot, and their staff came and put all that in for us. And so again, we have a lot of community organizations that are looking for projects for nonprofits, and we are more than welcome. Or they are more than welcome to contact us and find out what we can work towards together to help help continue our mission.
Mm-hmm. And is your facility on K Beach like enough to accommodate your operations? Are you running out of space, or I guess are you adequately? Do you have enough space for your operations right now?
Currently, we do, but I'd have to say that the long term goal would be to replace that facility probably within the next 10 years.
Okay.
Yes. What we have, it works well. It's paid mm-hmm. for. That's great. But certainly we're always looking towards the future for our long-term strategic plan that would be inside of that for sure.
Okay. And I'd like to talk a little bit, just because you guys are on the front lines of this, maybe food insecurity trends in this community, and maybe, you know, who exactly, what you observe, I guess, in this role. And I know everybody is probably familiar with the jump, I'm sure you saw during the pandemic, of people needing services. I guess, what does the demand look like on an average basis? And do you notice, I guess, fluctuations in when you're seeing demand for services?
I'm going to probably have Sean really answer that, because it's actually, in the handful of months that I've been there, it's been very eye-opening for me. And I feel that, like, I've known of the food bank the entire time I've been in Alaska, and to actually see firsthand, it breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. Because this is my community, and I kind of knew the need was there, because you know about the food bank, that kind of thing, but actually to see it front lines, it's definitely an eye-opening experience. But I think Sean is better to speak for in regards to trends. It hasn't lessened in the entire 4 months I've been there. We're still consistently seeing, you know, 90, 95 people in the diner every day. We still have people that are coming and doing the direct service, and agencies coming in, picking up food, the senior boxes that we give out. The need hasn't lessened in the 4 months I've been there, but Sean can probably talk better about the trends that he's seen over the last handful of years he's been involved.
Mm. Certainly there was a spike during COVID. A lot of people losing their jobs and stuff like that. My observation has been that, first of all, you know, we don't, for statistical reasons, we do ask some questions, but we're not very invasive when it comes to someone asking for direct service. So I can't say we have a lot of fact-based demographics. I mean, there are some trends, right? And I would break down our client base in kind of two categories. One is that a regular customers that have, or clients that have been coming for a long time because of their certain social and financial needs, that's where they've ended up in life. And then the other part would be people with some temporary situations where, you know, things have gotten tough for their family and they need assistance with food, mm-hmm. and they need it now. And when that's what we're here to provide our community. I think the past that, what we have to look at is that, you know, if you're hungry, you don't have much else that you can focus on until you've been fed.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to look for a new job, hard to look or worry about your health. I mean, it's tied to your health, but certainly, you know, foraging for food basically is a very elemental of being human. And, you know, pretty much those two groups of people is who we serve. Right. And many times that same person that we provided some temporary assistance for a few months or a year or two are the ones that come back and volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And that's, it's really helpful, because you need to be compassionate. You need to not be prying. You need to just say, We're here to help. We're here to provide you that food. No questions asked. That's not really the point of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really makes for a healthy community. The diner is a great place to come. If you're a business and you're out there listening to this show, you should bring your staff to the diner and have a meal and see how maybe you donated money. Maybe you were at the soup supper and you bought something and, you know, you want to see how did that money affect somebody. You go to the diner and you'll get a very clear understanding of how that money is redistributed and repurposed to provide that assistance to the people that we serve. Obviously, there are many other needs. We do a big turkey fundraising every year. So we get companies to adopt a turkey, and then we distribute them all over the peninsula. We, you know, fly them into Toyonic as an example, or by boat over to Seldovia. I mean, there's just no end to the need. And again, we're blessed with the opportunity to be able to provide or fill that need for people in our community, because that's a big deal. If you're hungry, you're not really focused on much else in life, and that has to be taken care of first before you can try to move forward and improve your standard of living or your situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and kind of building off of that, I guess, do you notice any type of like seasonality to demand? I'm just thinking, like, we obviously have a large tourism industry here, and in the summer, I feel like this is just me speaking anecdotally, but jobs are easier to find than maybe in the off season. I guess, do you notice any trends when it comes to what season it is?
I'd have to say the diner definitely does a little more business in the wintertime.
Okay.
But again, we do have a transient work population in the summer, and they're not always the highest paid people, and they might need that little extra help. So it's really hard to pin down exactly. I mean, again, we get people that they come in on Friday, and we've done so many meals in the diner, and we have some extra, and hey, you know, can I get something for the weekend? You betcha, you know, and mm-hmm. It's not so easy to pin down. Everybody's a little different. But the need is always there.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you know, when you're putting out hundreds of thousands of pounds every year, the need is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. And I would think that would maybe kind of factor into, you know, you mentioned grants and fundraising, like when you're trying to, you know, quantify or communicate the need that exists. Are you looking at like the diner operations, like how many meals served, or when you're, you know, trying to raise money for operations, you know, what are you explaining to folks as far as, you know, this is the demand is there?
You know, it's across the board. The Rasmussen Foundation for years has been very generous to us. We just had to replace, as an example, our complete septic system.
Oh boy.
Everything from the sink to the end of the leach field. That was very expensive. And they came through. And they came through even over and above what our original estimate was going to be when we had to realize the pipe between the septic and the leach field was inferior to the small steps to, you know, we had a Preferred Plumbing came in and replaced our grease trap, which appeared to be the source of a lot of the problem downstream of the septic tank. So, I mean, and you know, what we just simply asked, hey, could you do that for us? And they took care of it. They provided the labor, they paid for the new, grease trap configuration instrument that did that for us. And, you know, that's wonderful community support we have. So there's always infrastructure to take care of. We mm-hmm. have three freezers, refrigeration units. I mean, during COVID, we really capitalized on a lot of the opportunities mm-hmm. to improve our kitchen facilities. So we have the right warmers. Stove is A1. Everything's in place there. The refrigeration units have been gradually replaced over the past few years. I believe Walmart was a provider of what they were replacing. They gave to us, so we had something okay. good to use. But again, these are expensive pieces of equipment. Our electricity bill is a little over $4,500 a month to run the electricity,
yeah.
right? So I mean, it takes a lot.
Yeah,
there's a lot of overhead involved in that. And we're not going to recover it at 19 cents a pound for handling. So that's why it's really important that we provide or that we rely on the community for financial support. You know, I know maybe some some public radio stations do this, where that, you know, a dollar donate, $20 a month donation would go a long way. If we could get that from X amount of people in our community, we'd be set. And then there's also individuals that create food drives. We just finished a food drive. Yeah. Well, maybe you could speak to that food drive that we just completed.
So Tammy Larson is a newer community member. They bought property up here, and then I believe they actually just moved up this spring. She's been knocking on the food bank door for about a year now. She's got a heart of service, and she works with a lot of other industry or other service-oriented people. And she created this Freedom from Hunger food drive. Mm. And it was a three-week drive from late part of August, and it just wrapped up on September 13th. And she called 8 grocery stores in the area, Walmart, both Safeways, IGA, Save You More, both Three Bears, and Fred Meyers, and all agreed to be drop locations for us. And ended up bringing in 2,800 pounds of tangible food. And then we had about $600 in online donations, which equates to about 300 pounds of food.
Okay.
And that was something that I call it her brainchild, and it was her baby, and she launched it this year, and we did an incredible job, and she's planning already. We have a wrap up meeting tonight and planning for next year. And so we have a handful of people that, choose to support us in that way, which is amazing. And then like Sean said, with, you know, fundraising, grant writing, a lot of people don't realize the operation that we do have. And I always invite people to come and take a tour of the food bank so they can actually see. When he talks about 3 freezers, we're not talking about like the freezers that you have on your front porch. Like, these are the huge walk-in freezers,
You could park your car in that.
Yeah. I was like, that equate to
that's
our,
helpful to understand the scale.
Yes, exactly. And so it doesn't look like that big of an operation when you drive by. But stop, swing through. We'll give you a tour, and you can actually see how big of a lift this thing is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing, one thing that you both have mentioned is, and I think this is probably true for any peninsula-wide organization, but when you consider like across the water communities off the road system, it seems like there are just some inherent logistical challenges in reaching folks who their community can't be accessed by car. I guess, how does the diverse spread out nature of communities on the peninsula, what are the logistics associated with that, as opposed to maybe, you know, like an Anchorage food bank situation where all the communities are right there? How do you go about managing the logistics of getting food across an area the size of West Virginia?
You know, once we understand the need, we have great support in our community. I love plugging all the donors. Kenai Aviation for many years has helped us get food across the Tyonek. I apologize, I don't know the name of the Homer Flying Service, but they do the same thing for us in Soldovia. They're very, very willing to do that for us, especially during the holidays and stuff. So it's a challenge, but it always seems to be met. In addition to our 11 or so staff members we have, we also have probably 30 volunteers.
Give
or take at all, not at all times, but certainly another dozen volunteers there every day helping us sort food and do the dishes and serve the meals in the Fireweed Diner, sort the vegetables and produce. That's a constant thing. Help in the garden. I mean, it's just endless how much of a need there is. Mm-hmm. And we're blessed with how generous our community is about providing that need. But I think, something, you know, I remember when I first was going to food bank stuff, I'm like, well, we'll just write a check. I'll feel good about that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I suggested to my wife, we should do more. And I had no idea how big that need really was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets you.
I get emotional about it. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, makes a difference. I mean, it makes a difference to actually show up and participate and say, hey, listen, no, I'm not here just to write a check. That's kind of easy sometimes. Not that we don't take checks, but you know, the real point is we all need to participate to support the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
People that are experiencing food insecurity is not a pleasant thing, and it shouldn't happen in this country. It shouldn't happen in a country that is as wealthy as we are. Mm-hmm. Ever. But it does, and not through their always default to their own. The client needs that support, and we're there to provide that to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and John, I know you had mentioned that the kind of operations logistics is something that's going to fall under your purview a little bit. I mean, what is it like kind of taking on that role? How do you go about strategizing to make sure that need that we keep talking about is met?
One of the things that we're very lucky at the food bank to have is a very stable staff. Everyone has been in the role for a handful of years. And as I was telling Sean at one point this morning when we were driving over, is my job is to eliminate the roadblocks for them to be able to do their jobs. Mm-hmm. Great staff, great support system, and I just let them do their jobs. And so when logistical things arise, I meet with the staff, I talk to Sean, and we kind of come up with what's the best way to work around this and to make something happen. A lot of things that I've learned in the last couple months that I've been there is the fact that we run and grab food from grocery stores on a daily. Mm. Including Saturdays, even though the food bank isn't open on Saturdays. And so making sure that the trucks have functioning brakes, you know, is one of those logistical things of making sure that we have the mechanic there and they're doing the work that needs to be done, making sure that we have the freezers and the refrigeration systems up to temp, making sure we actually have people there to receive the food, to weigh it in. It's such a domino. One thing can cause a hiccup with another thing, and just making sure that there are no roadblocks, that everything's running smoothly, and that the staff can do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. We have to definitely know how to pivot. Okay. I believe it was ice cream got below standard temp or required temp for a grocery store, a local grocery store to use it. It was still fine. It wasn't mm-hmm. thawed. And, you know, they immediately call us and, hey, we got a lot of ice cream here. We'll be right there. Okay. Right? So, I mean, that's kind of how we can fill that need very quickly. Someone knew... with the salmon spill, someone knew that I was on the board and said, hey, can you use that? I'm like, oh, watch this. And yeah, in no time at all, we had people there they delivered it. That was great. But we had people at the food bank mm-hmm. willing to stand there for their afternoon and fillet fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely a game of telephone. He called me and I was like, is this a weird test? Like, like, are you seeing like how far I can run with this?
Yeah.
And it was great because between, all the phone calls that we've made, the asks out onto social media, we ended up with, I think he said, like 6 or 8 volunteers that for a handful of hours on a Saturday filleted fish. Mm-hmm. And that was incredible. It's really great to see our community come together like that. Mm-hmm. I think everybody can get behind the mission that, you know, no one deserves to go hungry.
Yeah. Well, and I would think too that having, I guess, like the reputation and good standing that the food bank does on the Kenai Peninsula, like having folks know that you're there and they can reach out to you if they've mm-hmm. got a situation like that, I would think would be, you know, helpful or beneficial to operations.
Yeah, that's one of the blessings of this community is you have somebody like Sean who pretty much, you know, was raised here. Yeah, I've been in town for 17, 18 years and we're heavily connected. And so people can easily place a phone call or send a text message and then it just kind of spreads like wildfire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there any like other maybe unconventional ways that you're sourcing food? I you know, you're talking about like a salmon spill and, you know, grocery store situations.
We ended up with 2 pallets of bananas about a month and a half ago.
Okay.
And again,
what's the story there?
You know, it was just one of those things of they had all these bananas and they were like, can you get rid of them? And I said, bet. And within a day we had 2 pallets of banana. So if everybody in the community around mid-July got some banana bread from somebody, it probably came from bananas from the food bank.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another example of the community working with us, you know, the Church of Latter-day Saints purchased 2 food or freeze dryers for us to use. And these are expensive machines and they have to have a reasonable amount of skill to operate those. And a board member took serious interest in that and got us up and running. And now we're able to, you know, before that strawberry goes bad and has to go to the farmers, we can go ahead and freeze dry it and distribute it that way. And then you have like the Homeless Connect or that we do every year, we participate with every year. You know, if you're homeless and living in a tent in the woods, you don't always have a way to prepare food.
Right.
So if you had something freeze dried.
Something shelf stable.
Bingo, there you go. Yeah. So it's shelf stable and ready to be used.
Mm-hmm. So, that's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, we're going to always be open to any suggestion or any offering of a donation. And if any way it serves our mission, is to make sure people don't go hungry. So that's our primary mission. Mm-hmm. We got to stay in that lane. But out inside that lane, we can be very flexible on how we can accommodate and repurpose the food or the resources that are out there in the community for us to use.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sounds like you're pretty very low waste right now. I think that's the phrase that you used earlier. Are there any other like freeze drying, you know, that is a very specific service. Are there any types of other maybe food preservation or storage techniques that you're hoping to branch out and into, or any areas you'd like to expand that at all?
I think the freeze drying thing's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
For now. And again, like we were able to freezer pack the fish that we processed the other day. So we have the means to process whatever we have.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think there's a big opportunity in the community, hunters, to
nudge,
emphasis placed.
Not yeah. that it just ended, hunting season just ended, but yeah. right, there's an opportunity. If you can't use all that, or maybe you want to just give 10% of your harvest to the food bank,
mm-hmm.
go through the processor and say, hey, listen, let's get that, hold that out for 10% or 5% or whatever you think you can manage, so you don't end up with waste or dog food. Not the dogs don't live and eat, but nonetheless, instead of giving it to dogs after it's been in the freezer too long, just give it an opportunity. Because gosh, you know, if you're food insecure, you probably don't have the means to go out and hunt yourself, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably a pretty big challenge, because it's expensive to go out. It's more than a bullet to go out and hunt for wild game, and it's a very healthy protein. Is very good food for people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, those are opportunities like that, that we're willing to work with anybody and try to figure out how logistically to go. If we have to send someone to go get something, it's no problem. We can do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can make a lot of stuff happen.
Yeah. And I guess like in a situation like that, is the food bank able to, I guess, like approach people directly, or how do you go about like connecting with folks who you think may be able to help and who maybe don't know that the food, like what the food bank does and doesn't accept? And what does that outreach look like? I guess obviously we're talking about it now on the radio.
I like that. Like this. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go with this one. Talking sure. on the radio is the way to go. Again, that and just getting out to like the game processors and saying, hey, by okay. the way, if there's a, you know, maybe somebody who's hunting from outside and doesn't want to carry six coolers full of moose meat back home to wherever. They were just trophy hunters. This utilize that meat too, though, and make sure it doesn't get wasted, because we all, you know, live in a culture up here where we don't want to ever waste our game
mm-hmm.
or our natural resources, and that's important. So again, we reach out to the different people that are part of that chain, whether it's the processor or maybe the pilots that fly the people in and out, to give us an opportunity to repurpose or get some of that resources ourselves.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times also, if there's a need for volunteers, or like, you know, when we were asking for the salmon fillets, or, you know, talk about Banana Gate or whatever, we do put...
Did you say Banana Gate?
I did. I'm here to bring the fun.
I love that.
We actually put a call out on social media. And so we're on Instagram and Facebook, Kenai Peninsula Food Bank. So people can go and follow us there too. And then we do have a website. It's not as immediately updated like our social media is. So a lot of times if there's an immediate need, you know, it's pushed out through social media for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, and I would like to spend, we're already at like about 15 minutes left, which,
oh, wow.
you know, just flies by. But I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, how folks can get involved and maybe some upcoming initiatives and projects that the food bank is working on. And so I guess, you know, like as we look ahead at maybe the next 6 months or the next year, what are some of the goals that you guys have, and what are some of the things you're going to be working on?
So, in regards to jumping back real quick to how people can get involved, I always say there's three ways people can get involved: their time, their talent, or their treasure. So time, coming volunteering for the food bank, treasure meaning make a donation, a monetary donation. And then talent would be, we had a gentleman that was coming in over the summer every Friday and was playing music in the diner.
Mm.
You know, we have other people that like to crochet stuff, and so they sell that, and then the money comes back to the food bank. So there's always a way for people to volunteer or to be involved. And if you have an idea, hit us up. Like I said, we can make a lot of stuff happen. Over the next few months, just looking at our calendar, quick hit rundown of things. So we'll start Adopt a Turkey August 1, $25 per turkey. Last year, we gave out 1,400 turkeys.
Okay.
And we do that through our partner agencies, of course, and then directly through the food bank. On October 18th, we are partnering with Kenai Aviation at their annual pumpkin drop. They are going to ask for a food drive to happen. So food bank will be there. And Joel has said I can drop a pumpkin from the airplane.
Oh, excited.
So excited. Oh.
You're going to
so
be in excited. The plane.
That's what he says.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? Good thing that you don't live over Kenai, Sean. Then on the 31st, we have our annual It's Scary to Be Hungry event from 4 to 6. And then on November 2nd, we are partnering with Hill Corp for the Kenai River Brown Bear Game. So they buy out the arena. If you'd like to attend, it's two cans of food per person. And last year, I think we yielded like 3,000 pounds worth of food off of that. It was pretty phenomenal for that event. So that's just a quick snapshot of, you know, 3 weeks in October, early November of what happening. I'll defer back to Sean for goals.
Certainly with the holidays coming up, the generosity rises in the community, and we were very grateful for that. Again, with specific food drives, Marathon will put one on, I'm sure, again, out at their refinery. Hill Corp is very generous. They actually give an allowance to their employees to donate to their favorite charity, and we want to always be their favorite charity. So we'll be, you know, hopefully Hill Corp employees are listening now.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I gotta, you know, provide something for the food bank. So that's really important. There's a lot of individual drives. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of, you know, on the other side of that, there's a lot of, the needs seem to rise. Schools just started, right? And often we get notified from the counselor or the teacher or the principal, hey, we got a family here that's, you know, they're not quite connecting. They're not quite figuring out how to, maybe they have a challenge to just get to the food bank on K Beach. Maybe it's too far a drive. You know, we can work with any of those situations to make sure somehow we can get the food to the people that need it the most. So, I mean, that's always, again, back to being a large logistics organization, right? That can be a big load, or it can be a very small amount. But we can find a way for sure to provide people with the needed food, because certainly, just like going to work hungry, going to school hungry is not a picnic or not something we want to see happen at all. So.
Another thing to touch base on also is when you're checking out at your local grocery store and they ask you, would you like to donate a dollar to feed local neighbors in need? That money does come to the food bank.
Okay.
I want to make sure that people do understand. We actually will receive a check. It's called Cause Marketing. And so we'll receive a check from the organization that's collecting those funds. So for people, if, again, time, talent, treasure, right? It's easy to donate $5 as you're checking out, or a dollar, or whatever you can donate. We'll gladly accept.
That's good to know, because I feel like sometimes folks are always like, you know, is this legitimate? Like, is this money actually going to the food bank?
Yes, but it is.
It's helpful to know that it is.
Yes, it is. It is. And that was something that when I was looking over funding sources, I was like, oh, that money now does come back to the food bank. That's good. That is good to know. Because again, I'm like you, where it's like, where is the money actually going? It's coming to us.
Absolutely. And some of those grocery store employees are pretty persuasive about making sure that they remind there's an opportunity there for someone checking out to do that. And then the stores individually will have contests as well, where what cashier raised the most amount of money and stuff like that.
Sure.
So, I mean, it just, like Jonna says, it builds.
Yeah.
The momentum builds, and it provides just that much more to push us over the finish line to help us keep food in this food system. To make sure anybody that lives in our community is not going to be hungry.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it seems like that would be kind of a natural place too. Just anecdotally, you know, grocery prices have gone up quite a bit. It's really expensive to shop at the grocery store right now. So that, of course, just seems like a place where people are already thinking about that and, you know, building on that.
back with COVID, boy. The donations from the grocery stores kind of shrank pretty quick.
Oh, really?
Well, they had a difficulty getting, you know, remember back when toilet paper, you had to go run and get, So again, the food was the same way. So as a consequence of that, nothing against them, but as a consequence of that, they've gotten a lot better with their supply chain and providing or not having as much waste as they used to. So there have been times where we have to take our donation money and go out and buy food to supplement what we have available for our clientele.
Oh, interesting.
So that's not unusual at all to either buy locally or have to go to Costco and, you know, buy a big truckload of food to supplement what we have available, because we're trying to provide a balanced nutritional meals for our clients. So you can't just give everybody, you know, 20 pounds of rice and expect that's going to make much of a difference in their lives, right?
Yeah.
You have to kind of balance all that out with the other ingredients that make a nutritious meal.
Mm. Do you like tend to see a relationship between like donations and maybe the economy, which, you know, economy capital E, I guess, like when things are more expensive, do you see an impact on donations, or is it kind of circumstantial?
I think our people in this community have a big heart.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. They just show up when they ask. When they get asked, they just show up, and it's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. And as far as like, you know, if somebody is looking to, you know, you're talking about like the three ways that people can get involved. If somebody, you know, just wants to make a donation of certain amount of pounds of food, are there like certain standards that the food bank requires as far as like, we'll accept this, but we won't accept this? Or what should folks maybe keep in mind if they're thinking about dropping something off?
I always say non-perishable is always the way to go. But really and truly, if you're dropping off food, we've had some people that recently were moving out of state, and so they cleaned out their fridge and dropped everything off to us, and then we can sort through it and decide, you know, what we can turn around and give out or what ends up, you know, going to the farmers, and having that conversation with them as opposed to having them be like, well, I don't think that they want it. No, bring it to us. But I always opt first, of course, is I can't say it, shelf stable.
Yep.
Shelf stable.
I don't have a speech impediment, but I can't say shelf stable. Yeah, there
we
go.
We got it.
Thank you. Just edit that one in. But of course, you know, if you want to give, we're not going to tell you no. Mm-hmm. Bring it in. We'll take a look at it, and we'll go from there.
Non-perishable is ideal too, because it's probably the most functional way that a client could receive the food, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have to eat it right away. They can put it on their shelf and maybe figure out how they budget their food so that they can provide meals consistently throughout the week for their family.
Mm-hmm. And I guess on the kind of flip side of that, you were talking about how the Fireweed Diner is open to anybody who wants to come in. For folks who are looking for maybe sustained service from the food bank, or people who are coming in for that direct service, those boxes, is there any type of, can anybody sign up for that? Do you have to meet a certain income level? Who is eligible to receive services in that way?
I would have them give us a call. Phone number is 907-416-7619, or stop by the food bank, because we do have different programs for different stages of life, different income levels, and it's easier for us to have a conversation and figure out what suits their needs rather than for somebody to be like, "Ma, I don't think I qualify."
Right.
So I would rather have people give us a call or swing by and have that conversation, because, you know, we might be able to make some stuff happen for them.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We have a, I would like to say, a pretty low bar. Right?
Okay.
So you can demonstrate a need, or again, have a conversation with our staff, you're going to probably walk out with some food.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly, we don't turn people away. We just don't. Mm-hmm. It's not our policy. It's not our mission. Our mission is to, you know, feed people, because no one deserves to go hungry. And that's where we keep in our forefront when we're dealing with the generosity of the community and the donations that we've been provided.
Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about upcoming next 6 months to a year. What about, you know, long-term goals when you think about the food bank and maybe the next 10 or the next 15 years, which, you know, maybe is hard to conceptualize at this point, but, you know, are there any, you know, long-term initiatives that you're hoping to start, or what's on the horizon?
Apparently Sean wants a new building.
Yeah, that's what's made me want to ask this question, actually.
Yeah, wow, there you go, triggered her. I don't really know what the future looks like as far as if we're going to outgrow that facility eventually.
Okay.
Does that mean we get one bigger facility, or maybe we keep that as a hub and we use smaller facilities spread out further around the peninsula. It's such a big peninsula. Right?
Yeah.
It's just so much that might be the way to go. We'll have to look into that. Well, again, we are blessed with this amazing board of directors. I'm not speaking about me. I'm speaking about the other board members that have been there a long, long time. So we have very consistent trains of thought, healthy discussion about what our path forward should be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, we've developed a nice strategic plan that we just simply look at, check our goals, provide feedback to each other on how we're doing with those goals, and then stay focused on our path forward. So it's, again, it's a very focused plan. So we try to know, based on our client needs, where we, what direction we should be taking things. So what the future brings exactly, it's hard to exactly say, but I know expansion is definitely in the future. Unfortunately, it's necessary. I mean, we serve 20,000-30,000 people now, and that's population of the peninsula is not much more than double that, if I'm not mistaken. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can speak to Sean. He's one of the awesome board members.
Yeah.
He wants to, don't roll your eyes at me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess, like, I mean, John, as executive director, are there any, now that you're in kind of this, you know, the top role at the food bank, you can correct me if that is an inaccurate characterization, but are there any initiatives that you're hoping to get off the ground or that you've been wanting to implement?
So my first year is going to be my learning year. And I don't plan on making any huge changes just because I don't know what I don't know yet. And so being reliant on the board and the staff to make sure that the mission continues, that we're being mindful of donor dollars, that we're still serving our clientele to the best of our abilities. And that's kind of where I'm at this point. So let's meet again in a year and have another conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're blessed with John on board because now we have somebody that can execute that strategic plan and help us achieve our goals as a board. But it's completely integral situation, right? The board relies on the executive director, and the executive director works with the board to make sure we're going in the same direction, that our path forward is the same and parallel. And that way we don't waste any of the resources that are available to us to achieve our goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I've just been lobbing questions at you for almost an hour now. I will give the floor over to you guys for this kind of last segment. If there's anything else that, you know, you're hoping to plug or mention or promote, or just anything that you think is relevant for folks to know about what you're doing over there at the food bank.
I'm just incredibly grateful. Quite honestly, I'm grateful, even though I've never had to deal with food insecurities, I'm grateful that we have something like this in our community. That our clientele can come to us and know that there's not going to be any judgment, know that it's not going to be invasive. It's, if they need food, we're going to get them food, bottom line. I'm excited for this opportunity for me personally, because I do have a heart of service, and being able to see my talents being used for the greater good always makes me a happier person for sure. And just a reminder of the events that we have coming up over the next handful of weeks. We're pretty busy through October and into November. And then just gentle reminder is, if you want to, you know, give, volunteer, donate, you can give us a call, 907-416-7619. You can go on our website, kenaifoodbank.org. Nope, that's not right. kpfoodbank.org.
Got it.
Social media channels, Kenai Peninsula Food Bank on Instagram and Facebook. And if there is a need, if you are having issues and you need us, call us. Come by.
Sean,
you know,
I
would just add that, you know, we're going to be good stewards of the generosity of the community to provide the service we promised the community we're providing, that we're going to feed people because no one deserves to go hungry. And we're going to do that through the generosity of our community. We don't look really outside of our own community for that support. We feel it's organic, that it should come from the community. And again, if you're out there listening and you're thinking about, well, how can I help? Just call and we will find a way to help, have you help, or facilitate your giving in an appropriate and comfortable fashion for you. And again, we will be prudent not wasteful with the resources you provide us to fulfill our mission.
You want to give us that phone number one more time?
Sure, 907-416-7619.
And that'll be all for this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. Thank you so much again to Jonna Beach and Sean O'Reilly for joining us today. As a reminder, you can hear the Kenai Conversation every week on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. And you can also find the show on our website at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening.